Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today we'll hear more from a multimedia project we introduced here recently. It has been produced by Glacier Farm Media, it's called Seeding the Future, and it's a deep dive into the issues of seed and the rich genetic resources in seed that farmers everywhere rely upon.
So the way I like to look at the wild relatives is that they are the treasure box of the breeders, but they need to know what it is in that treasure box. So characterizing them for a specific trait, for a specific gene, will make it easier for them to be utilized.
We're going to hear about a huge addition to pea processing in the Eastern Prairies. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant, and a mechanic, and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
The French company Roquette is putting its just-completed $600 million pea protein processing facility in Portage la Prairie into full production. And that's a heck of a lot of peas, I just said. That creates a big market for pea growers, and it's a new market on the cutting edge of the burgeoning plant protein industry and trend. A few of us at Glacier Farm Media Publications have had a chance to speak with Roquette officials about the plant and what they're looking for with peas. Here I asked Derek McLean, Roquette's grain procurement manager, about how Roquette is contracting with farmers. I also asked Roquette's agronomy head, Bruce Brawley, about how his team is working with growers. Your company's decided to contract and work one-on-one with farmers, as opposed to taking the easy way that a lot of people do, which is to hire a grain company and just have it all hauled in and hauled out. You've gone to a much more laborious style of dealing with individual farmers all over the place. Can you tell us a bit about why you decided to do that and what that gives you that you wouldn't have if you did it the other way?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you're totally right that it's a lot more work. But at the end of the day, it's really good to be connected with the producer at the primary level. What it really gives us is traceability throughout the whole chain of our protein and what we're selling to our end use customer. So we want to be in control. We want to be able to help our growers at the front line produce the good product that our end use customers are wanting. So that's the role. That's why we're out there contracting acres. And that's why we're pushing really hard with our agronomy team and our sales team on booking acres and dealing direct with the customer.
And for those of our listeners and readers who haven't yet dealt with the company, how are you interacting with farmers? What's your relationship?
Well, we've been signed up to acres with guys for the last 2 years, or companies with the last 2 years. So we've got 2 year track record in the local marketplace. On top of that, there's myself and other people that do have years of experience within the industry. With COVID, it's obviously led to not knocking on as many doors as traditionally possible, or going to ag shows and getting names that way. But I think Michelle and her team has done a pretty good job on the farmers and Western Canada knowing who Roquette is. So it's guys are able to find us through Grow with Roquette or online or phone numbers. So it's been overwhelming, the response we've got from both our Manitoba and Saskatchewan farmers.
And you folks have gone as far as hiring agronomists to work with farmers. What is that about, and what are you hoping to achieve through doing that?
Bruce, I'll let you do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we have a team of agronomists. We have 3 agronomists on staff, myself, Anastasia Kubanek, and Jennifer McComb-Teru. And Jennifer is our organic agronomist. And we're working with farmers to help them grow the best quality crop that they can. And also we are working to collect the traceability information that Derek was talking about. So we collect information from seed right to the peas are delivered to the plant. We're only three people. So what we try to do is we try to work with agronomists whenever possible, because I don't want to be working with farmers directly as to how much fertilizer or phosphorus they need to put down on their field. We defer those type of questions to the agronomists. And we work with the agronomists through train the trainer type concept so that we can grow the crop as sustainable as possible. We often, during the summertime, we put out one bulletin a month for growers, and it talks about tips for weed control, or in the fall time, we talk about storage and what storage tips they could use and ensuring that they're checking their bins to maintain and keep quality.
And what's it been like doing this during a historic drought? I mean, this is not exactly a typical time. How has that affected your agronomy work?
Well, we're lucky we had the first run in 2020. So the plant is just get up and running now, but really the sourcing for peas has been running for 2 years. So we had a really good year in 2020. So it helped a wee bit with 2021. But yes, 2021 goes to prove that there's no such thing as average years anymore, because it did have its fair share of challenges.
And there are lots of farmers growing peas way west of here in Saskatchewan who might be very interested in, you know, the potential that this plant could mean for them. How do they find out if that would fit with, what would work for them as well as what would work for you? How do they figure out if they'd be your kind of a grower?
We're really pushing on the eastern side of Saskatchewan and Manitoba growers. We've had such a great response in the last 2 years of them supporting our business. That's where we're going first. Our phase two of our project here and of our contracting will be to try to reach out to some of those further areas and be a part of, you know, independent retailers, you know, making sure we got the word out to some of those organizations of what we're doing, stuff like that. So, and trade shows out there as well. So we're going to be doing that down the line. I think it's going to be important to us. We do have some organic growers that spread across into that Alberta region as well. So we'll reach out to people, but they can always get us online or through a phone call.
And I guess that's one of the points, is that you've got sort of just different catchment type areas for conventional and organic, because I imagine with organic you've got to reach much, much further west and northwest.
That's correct. Yeah.
But even for the conventional crops, we do want to source from Saskatchewan and Manitoba to try to spread out our risk. In most years, that type of philosophy works, because one region may have a little bit lower yield due to excess water, and you hope that the other areas can pick up in the yield for your, so you're delivering your normal amount of tonnage. Unfortunately, with 2021, the drought was all across Western Canada. So no matter where we were sourcing, yields tended to be lower, with the exception there were some small pockets that did get rain that had yields, you know, normal yields in that 40 to 45 bushels per acre. Unfortunately, there just weren't enough of those people, but yes.
Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator had a chance to ask for more details on the types of peas Roquette wants and how they need to be grown and managed.
Generally speaking, we're looking for a number two yellow CGC spec pea, first and foremost. The boundaries that are outside of that we're looking for, Alan, would be, we're looking for a two-year rotation, that piece of land did not have soybeans on it. One of the big things for our customers is allergens, soybeans and allergen. So that's the reason for that. The other main one is we've got customers that are looking for non-glyphos type products. So that would be another one. To get a production contract with Roquette, you have to guarantee that you're not spraying pre-harvest Roundup on the field. What else am I missing, Bruce? Those are the two main ones. There are three things.
And for anyone growing soybeans on the farm, there are extra cleaning steps are required. Yep. Make sure they clean the combine out before they harvest the peas, before they move peas, make sure augers are cleaned out. And this is part of the change in mentality that's been hard to instill in farmers because of COVID. We can't get in front of farmers. But we need to change the mindset of farmers from just growing a commodity pea to actually growing a food grade pea and the quality specs that go along with that.
The
other thing we collect would be is the traceability information. We request that farmers fill out their management practices from seeding all the way through to what crop protection products they use, fertilizer they use, and what bins they would store their peas in and the tonnage. So we collect all that sort of information too to pose in that traceability aspect that our clients are asking for.
Yeah, and the last two items that that the producer would require with us is we require an environmental farm program. They need to be a part of that, whether you're in Saskatchewan or Manitoba. And the last thing is certified seed. And with Tight Seed Supplies, Bruce and his team did a bunch of homework in the background to ensure that there would be enough seed available. So again, we're running a program this coming year with certified seed as a part of our production contract requirement.
He also asked Bruce Brawley about the danger that a widespread disease, aphanomyces, poses for farmers and his company.
And it's a long-lived soil-borne disease. And I lump it in with a bunch of other root rot diseases like Fusarium, Pythium, Rhizoctonia. And they're all root rot diseases. And in fact, aphanomyces wasn't positively identified in Western Canada until 2012 and 2016 in Manitoba. Yet, aphanomyces is widespread throughout the entire pea-growing area of Western Canada. And what happened, we believe, is that the Fusarium none of these four pathogens happen on their own. They're all found in fields and mixtures. And when Fusarium is in a field and it also infects peas, the symptoms of Fusarium override the symptoms of aphanomyces. So people were never looking for it and they didn't test for it. So by the time we found that we had the disease, it was already pretty widespread across the area. So it's probably as firmly as entrenched in Western Canada as clubroot is in Western Canada, and as soybean cyst nematode is getting to become in Manitoba. So aphanomyces is exactly as a nasty pest. It's probably the number one concern that we have from a sustainability long-term. But that's again why we have an agronomy team to help work with farmers to ensure that we can have farmers keep if they don't have aphanomyces on the farm, keep a 4 to 5 year rotation. Or if they have aphanomyces on the farm, we encourage them to go to a 6 to 8 year rotation to allow the pathogen level to get lower so they get economical crop. But aphanomyces in fields where it's really high, it can reduce yields up to 80% in a wet year because it's a water-loving disease pathogen, and the ooze spores can multiply very quickly. They cause the plant roots to die and the plant to wilt and loss of yield. The other problem is with aphanomyces is that there's no genetic resistance in pea varieties in Canada or worldwide. There is no magic bullet from a crop protection point of view. There's one seed treatment that has some protection against it, but aphanomyces can affect the plant at any point in time in the life. So seed treatments, they only last for 5 to 6 weeks. The other problem is that aphanomyces, the ooze spores in the ground, they can live for 7 to 10 years. So you have a bit of a challenge there. Now, the one thing that works in our advantage compared to Rhizoctonia fusarium is that aphanomyces has a very narrow host range. Peas, lentils, and some varieties of alfalfa are hosts for aphanomyces. So if you know you have aphanomyces, the idea is that you would go to non-host crops for the number of years to allow the soil levels of aphanomyces to drop. So how long, you say, does that take? Well, it's a good question. Right now it's a black box, and their best recommendation is that if you've identified aphanomyces in your field, you stay out for 6 to 8 years for rotation, and then you tempt back in it. We would like to add a bit more science to this. So we're working with research scientists as well as laboratories to commercialize a soil test to quantify spore levels in the ground. And this, by quantifying them in the ground, the goal is to be able to ground truth the number of spores per gram of soil to determine what level of disease, if anything, can occur. And by doing the ground truthing, the goal is that we can, a farmer could take a soil sample fall before, and they would know whether they have a low, medium, or high risk of ephenomyces. And they can make a decision then as to which field they would go into the following year.
Grawley offered encouraging advice for farmers who might be scared of seeding peas in the spring due to leftover nitrogen.
If you have soils that are higher than 50 pounds per nitrogen per acre and you want to grow peas, our thing is we just need to change the mindset of farmers for 1 year. So instead of having this 50 number stuck in your head, we still want you to plant peas on your lowest testing fields as long as it's less than 100 pounds of acre. If it's more than 100 pounds of nitrogen, then, you know, please go ahead, don't plant peas, plant your canola, plant your wheat, something that's going to take a good advantage of that nitrogen. So the 50 pounds, that's based on some research that hasn't been repeated a lot, but the number has been kind of kept in everyone's foreground because it's a nice round number. And in most years, it's easy to do because, you know, you often now have 30 pounds or 20 pounds kicking over. But this year, we're saying 100 pounds or less, because peas, if you're putting them on 80 pounds of nitrogen, we still recommend you add an inoculant, but the peas will grow just like a canola or wheat crop. They love nitrogen in the soil. Peas are kind of like teenagers, you know? If you feed them out with the food in the fridge, they'll take it in. So just like a wheat or canola crop. And once the soil levels for nitrogen start to drop, then the peas will nodulate a little bit later in the year, and then they'll fix their own nitrogen. So just because your nitrogen soils are higher than 50 pounds, we still encourage farmers to plant peas on their lowest testing ground. And as long as it's less than 100 kilograms of nitrogen or pounds of nitrogen, go ahead.
For lots more about the Roquette plant, you can look in the Western Producer for my recent stories, look at upcoming editions of the Manitoba Cooperator for Alan's stories, or check out any of the Glacier Farm Media websites. This is Between the Rows. Our next item is a part, only a small part, of a multi-publication, multimedia project entitled Seeding the Future. It's about seed, the rich bank of genetics our seed is based upon, and what's being done to safeguard our seed resources for the future. You can find the project at any Glacier Farm Media website or through the QR codes in any of the publications. In this piece, Robin Booker of the Western Producer looks at the wild plants pea and lentil researchers are investigating to find natural resistance to aphanomyces, the disease we discussed with Roquette earlier in the program.
Wild relatives are in trouble. Not the wild relatives that tend to make questionable decisions. I'm talking about the wild relatives of important agricultural crops. When it comes to food security, much more needs to be done than saving seeds in a bunker. Collecting and characterizing the wild relatives of agricultural crops is also important. Consider the plant disease Aphanomyces root rot in pea and lentil production here on the prairies. The fungus was first found in Saskatchewan in 2012, but it quickly swept through the entire region. There are now fields that can no longer grow peas or lentils because Aphanomyces would cause a complete crop failure. And this doesn't bode well considering how this disease affected other pea and lentil producing regions. Here is Dave Greenshields, Director of Research and Development at Saskatchewan Pulse Growers.
It's going to be a lasting problem, I think. I think if you look around at places that have historically grown peas, you know, it paints a pretty stark picture. So if you look at some of the northern states like Michigan or Wisconsin, you know, used to grow peas, don't anymore. France is another good example where they used to grow a lot of peas and they grow a lot less now. And that's because of root diseases. And so, you know, it's it's become a problem, and it's been a problem in Manitoba. They don't grow as many peas as they did, and the eastern part of Saskatchewan as well, but it's becoming more and more widespread, and now in both peas and lentils.
Aphanomyces is a top research priority for the Saskatchewan pulse growers, but right now there is little pea or lentil growers can do on fields where this disease has a solid foothold, other than grow something besides pea or lentil. This is partially because there aren't any fungicides or seed treatments capable of saving a crop from an Aphanomyces chokehold. The best chance Canadian pea and lentil growers have against this fungus are the plant researchers and breeders who are looking for new sources of Aphanomyces resistance. But these researchers and breeders are not allowed to use GMO or genetic engineering technology because peas and lentils grown in Canada are non-GMO crops. Instead, they have to find resistance or tolerance in either the land races or the wild relatives of these crops, and then breed these traits into modern varieties. Some tolerance has been found in pea varieties grown in other parts of the world, so Canadian farmers should soon be able to grow pea varieties that have Aphanomyces tolerance. For lentils, researchers have not been able to find resistance to this fungus in their surveys of lentil varieties from around the globe, so they've been forced to look at our friends, the wild relatives of lentils, for Aphanomyces resistance. But, as some of you may know, wild relatives can have some serious baggage. Here's Kristen Bett from the College of Agriculture and Bioresources at the University of Saskatchewan. She specializes in pulse crop genomics and dry bean breeding.
You know, nobody wants to cross with something wild if they don't have to, because it comes with a lot of baggage. But there's often instances where you cannot find the genetic variability you need in the cultivated species, then you know, the next best thing is to go looking at close relatives. Like, disease resistance is a really good example of a trait that you're more likely to find in a wild population than you will within the domesticated species, because the plants have been exposed over millennia to these pathogens, and they survive in the wild, right?
The Global Seed Vault in Norway is a valuable endeavor because it does preserve important genetic resources. But what really needs to be protected and promoted is diversity within the genetic resources that modern plant breeders actually have access to, so they can keep beating back these tireless threats.
Well, I always think of disease resistance as a bit of a nuclear arms race, right? Like, you're just piling on more forms of tolerance or resistance, and then the pathogen can mutate and affect it. The reason the wilds are a source of these resistance genes tends to be because they've coexisted with these pathogens for so long.
Plant Gene Resources of Canada is Canada's national seed gene bank. It's managed by Ag Canada in a Saskatoon facility. The seed bank has about 112,000 items that are available for plant researchers so they can enhance the crops grown in Canada. Bett said the gene bank is very important for new crop development and for preserving genetic diversity, but that it's a huge undertaking, hard to maintain, and underfunded.
The one fear with gene banks is that they become museums, and then funders are reluctant to fund museums because, you know, it's one of those, it's a one-way street, stuff goes in, it doesn't ever come out. But that's not how it should be working. What they do is they characterize the material. Every few years you have to regrow the seed or it will, you know, the viability goes off. So whenever they regrow them, they take notes on things like size, shape, color, you know, height, days to maturity, all those kind of basic traits. And that's all stored in a database. And then if I'm looking for something in particular, I can go into the database and say, hey, I want to see all your beans that have white seed coats or something like that. And then it'll give you a whole list and you can pick which ones you want.
Collecting and categorizing crops and their wild relatives is a lot of work, but the clock is ticking to get as many species into the seed bank as possible before they go extinct. A study was just published titled, Crop Wild Relatives of the United States Require Urgent Conservation Action. You can probably guess what its conclusion is. Its objective was to provide conservation assessment for 600 U.S. native plants that are wild relatives of important agricultural crops. It found that more than half of these species may be endangered in their natural habitat, and that the great majority require further conservation action. Habitat destruction, climate change, pollution, invasive species, and overharvesting in their natural habitat were all cited as reasons why these wild relatives are in trouble. Here in Canada, efforts are being made to collect and categorize wild relatives, including by DivSeek International, which is hosted by the Global Institute for Food Security in Saskatoon. DivSeek is a non-for-profit organization whose goal is to unlock the potential of crop diversity to enhance the productivity, sustainability, and resilience of crops. Here's Kat Navabi, Program Director at DivSeek, describing how she sees wild relatives.
So the way I like to look at the wild relatives is that they are the treasure box of the breeders. But they need to know what it is in that treasure box. So characterizing them for a specific trait, for a specific gene, will make it easier for them to be utilized.
She said that much more needs to be done to gather these important genetic resources before environmental pressures, including climate change, wipes them out.
We are not doing enough. As I mentioned, there are some barriers in utilizing them, but not knowing what they are is one of them. Not doing enough characterization of them. But in light of this new paper that came out this past week, we are not even doing enough in collecting and conserving them.
Getting genetic resources into the seed bank isn't easy. There's lots of paperwork, including getting approval from the country where you want to harvest wild relatives. And some areas are just too dangerous for researchers to work in, including parts of the Middle East where many of the wild relatives of the lentils live. But when a new disease emerges or changes, the genetic resources in seed banks are essential.
I think we still need backpackers out in the fields to collect and conserve. It's not that just keeping the seeds in a vault is enough. Communities like DivSeek International is all about engaging and inspiring and creating an environment where a collaborative effort can come together and achieve such huge and international efforts.
My name is Robin Booker with a Western Producer.
Robin's work can be found in the Western Producer, and the entire multimedia project, Seeding the Future, is available online at all the Glacier Farm Media websites. Or you can go directly to the project URL at gfmdigital.com/seeding-the-future. That's gfmdigital.com/seeding-the-future. That's all for this week. Please join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White. Thanks for spending part of your day with us.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.